Episode 52, Luke Tollich, Lyndon Purcell, how to set goals and stick with them. In today's episode, I continue the conversation with two gentlemen whom I respect greatly in the space and in general. Our main conversation revolved around the ability to set goals and, most importantly, follow through with them, which is one of the hardest things to actually get done. Both of these guys are some of the top educators in the world when it comes to fitness and have a respected track record as personal trainers. Today, you're going to hear part two of two. If you enjoyed the episode and would like to support the podcast, I would ask for you to please head over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast these days and leave me a five-star review and tell a friend. If you're here from Instagram, what's up? Thank you so much for joining us. Share a screenshot if you can of the podcast on your story and be sure to tag me at Austin Current and also tag up our guests, which their handles and websites and everything you'd like to know about them are, as always, in the show notes below. Enjoy the conversation. So Luke, you mentioned this constant recalibration and or this reflection and recalibration. And that's something that I think we all agree upon and we all do quite often. And I think that's a big part of, I'm still working through, and again, we're always going to be working through, but I'm still very much working through the realities of what that means day to day for myself, my feelings, how I go and enter the day, how I enter new projects, how I enter, just go out in public and exist. It's just those reflections impact me greater than I thought they would. And whether I'm reflecting over a course of a week's time or just multiple times over a week's time or over a month or whatever it is, very hard on one topic or on one nuance of something that just either didn't go as planned or there's something impacting me that I didn't think that was going to impact me that greatly. And in times like that, that's when I find myself really reflecting. And so I wanted to ask, what does that, for some tangible takeaways and actionable steps for those listening, what are some things that you use or some things that we can help with that recalibration process and not throwing away? Because I think the biggest part of this is not throwing away how you feel and becoming a stone, like you said, because I think I've used that tactic in the past. I have been very emotionless in the past. I can go through difficult situations without saying a word, without leaking an emotion, but more so, and that's who I was. And more so now, I think to a fault, so sometimes annoyingly and to a fault, I can share and I can be vulnerable and I can feel an emotion and I can express that emotion better and better, which some are better at receiving than others. But at the end of the day, it's important for me to get that out. And I ultimately feel better for getting that out and not being a stone, not being a statue of emotionless angst, essentially. So what are some recalibration things to not only help us, but through also being able to express ourselves from an emotion side and not throwing all that shit away?
Yeah. I think probably the biggest thing is just learning how to be introspective in a productive way. And unfortunately, I think that it's still something that I fall into a big trap with, but we're very, very good at distracting ourselves, especially in the modern world. And, you know, so people are thinking right now, oh yeah, he's going to say meditation. I think that's helpful, but I also think that simply having the curiosity and the space to process and simulate things in your mind is extremely important. And what I mean by that is that typically our attention is almost constantly demanded by something. If you are commuting to work, you have a podcast on or some music, or you're reading a book or whatever. And those can be very helpful activities. They can make you better. They can just be fun, but things don't always have to be there specifically so that you can, you know, become a better person and stuff. They can just be fun, and that's fine. But we never have the space to daydream. We never have the space to introspect, to have our focus unfocused, if that makes sense, or have our mind unfocused. So we want to be more in this sort of diffuse mode of thinking where we're trying to connect ideas and we're simulating possibilities and we're off with the fairies, for lack of a better word. You know, and when is the time that most people get this opportunity? When they lie down and go to bed, which, I mean, I think a lot of people who have difficulty falling asleep, it's probably not because of the blue light and the caffeine and all that shit. It's because the things that happen to give you blue light actually also happen to be very distracting, and you never have time to just sit with yourself. And so I think it's very important to create that space and that environment where you can let your mind run away with things. And you can, you know, as humans, I keep saying this word simulate, we have this unique ability to simulate possible future possibilities, to think through those things. And to me, that's probably the most powerful thing. You know, I have these, I have different ways I want to deliver my courses and new business ideas and new lectures I want to write and new concepts for how I want to run my business and what I want to do with my life. And what if we just did this? That stuff happens to me constantly, constantly. And, you know, most of those ideas I don't enact, because I do think that having patience and engaging with a process and just letting that bear its fruit is very important as well. But I also think that you need to turn over stones and be curious. And I always get made fun of because if somebody brings up something, I've usually read something about it or I've heard something about it. And so my wife always asks me shit and she's like, what do you know about this? I'm like, well, you know, I've never built a house, but I know this, this, and this about it. Like, just because I'm curious about it, to be honest with you. And I think about it, it's like, what if I became a carpenter? And, you know, like, it, that sort of stuff I think about quite often. So I think you need the space to do that. And in doing so, it simultaneously presents some opportunities that you may be missing. So you may think of an idea of like, hey, I never considered this actually. Like, maybe I can pursue this. And at the same time, it gives you probably 90% of these ideas that you're going to go, nah, that's a dumb idea, or that idea won't work, or something. And you discard that. And it actually strengthens your resolve or your concept of what you're currently doing, or of who you are and what your life is like. So for me, that's 100% the biggest thing. Now, sometimes that involves some strict practice, meditative practice or something like that. But often I think it's getting good at introspecting and being reflective. And a tool that I use for that sometimes is some kind of journal. And I think the best way of doing it is to have no specific outcome for this journal, but simply to set some kind of time limit or something, just so that you have some structure to it, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, however long you like, and to just write, stream of consciousness, knowing that no one else is going to read this, knowing that you might never look back on this, but being able to put your thoughts into words and to give them some kind of form, I find is really helpful for exploring ideas. You could even do something like a mind mapping kind of process or something like that. And that's to make it very practical and tangible. I think that's probably the easiest way to do this. And it's incredible how unburdened you feel after you do something like that. And it does fuel creativity and help you to take a more objective view of things at the same time. So I think that's a really helpful practice. So I guess that's kind of how I would go about it.
The first thing I'll say for the listeners' benefits at home, like, I'm gonna hurt my C-spine with all this nodding and like agreeing.
I'm a bobblehead on the other side of this.
I don't think a podcast format with each of us muting ourselves does justice to the other person who's getting a lot of silent laughter or nodding or, you know, raised eyebrows in the background. I will, just to sort of put a full stop, hopefully, on the end of the point that Luke made, me mentioning meditation was certainly not to suggest it is this be all end all sort of thing. And I know Luke wasn't suggesting that. And it is just an unfortunate, we can see the poverty we have of solitude and introspection, that we basically sort of just any sitting still activity is just like, yep, that's meditation is just sort of like that. That's everything. And it's all lumped into the same basket. But yeah, introspection and meditation are certainly not the same thing and don't serve the same purpose. And something I actually find very useful for my meditation practice when I could feel my head was just spiraling while I was doing it is I would spend 5 minutes just sitting there, just being like, okay, just run wild. I'm going to think about KFC, and then I'm going to think about the K within KFC, and then I'm thinking about the Ku Klux Klan, and then I'm thinking about white, and then I'm thinking about white paper, and then the time that I drew a dick on a white paper. And it's just like your brain just, I think it's uncoupled association, or there's a cognitive term for, I can't remember exactly, but, and after a while it sort of, it burns itself out. And that's, I think, what Luke is somewhat speaking about like, get that out of your system before you try to go to bed. And for me, it was just before I tried to meditate. After like 3 or 4 minutes of that, now I can sit down and actually achieve the objective that I'm working on in this meditation practice. And there's a variety of different ways you can do this. And sort of to piggyback a little bit off the journaling thing, like I love to doodle, like to just draw little pictures. And that's sort of, I like, you know, I write, and there's other ways I get my stream of consciousness out into the sort of the more objective world. But doodling really helps as well. And there's like, oh man, there's themes to my doodles today. Like there's something going on there. Sometimes they're more rigid. Sometimes they're more, you know, flowy, or I can't even think of a good word to describe it. But people are, I would just try to make the point that you are really interesting on the inside. And I'm not speaking to anyone in particular here. Like, take a little look inwards. And if you don't find anything interesting, then there's probably a good reason to start piling some interesting things in there and seeing what you can construct internally as well.
It's powerful, man. I agree.
It's not. I just say random things.
No, shut up. this is a giant round table of no one admitting anything to their own benefit, which, touche. But yeah, I'm extremely grateful for both of those answers. And one thing, as kind of the moderator of the conversation, they both have served separate benefits within my own life between journaling and meditation. Just to make this, again, continue to make this tangible for those listening. Journaling is a way for me to brain dump the chaos that flows within my mind. And again, that's, if you were to go back and read some of my journal entries, some are, if we're talking like a normal notebook size, college ruled, they're maybe half a page. Some are 4 pages front and back. So where it just, and I just allow time to let it go. And there's no surprise here, but the more chaotic it is in my mind, the longer that journal entry becomes, the longer that flow of consciousness becomes. And the more I go from KFC to the K to the white page to the dick on the page to the, you know, the more I jump around topics and ideas and troubles and reflect on those troubles. And I think one of the most helpful things for me journaling wise is absolutely zero censorship. So just allow these things to flow, allow them to come out. If it sounds stupid, it probably fucking is stupid, but it doesn't matter because you need to get that stupid thing out of your head and get it onto paper so you can actually objectively see it. You can actually objectively look at it and grade it of, is there validity to this? Or am I full of shit? On that one, check mark. Absolutely full of shit. Move on. But get it out of your head. So no matter what it is, write it down. And then from writing whatever that chaos is in my mind about a single subject or a topic or a sentence that comes in my head or just a word, then I'll write about what about that word, phrase, or sentence or topic bothers me, agitates me. How do I change it? What's my approach? Who do I want to make proud because of these decisions? I write a lot about making my grandfather proud of decisions. He's very much a North Star of a good, genuine, hardworking person that I've always had in my life, who's been a cornerstone of inspiration for me, someone who, when I went to university, he's the reason I got into university or the university that I got into because of his connections, and basically put his whole reputation on the line with this office that he worked 15 years for or alongside with the football team, and just said, look, none of his test scores, none of his grades reflect what he can do. Just trust me. He put himself out there, and I was going to do everything in my power to make sure he did not regret that decision, that he was not disappointed in that decision. And that was my objective. And I made that happen through a lot of hard work and a lot of studying and a lot of uncomfortable moments. But I always, if I need someone, and this is, I'm mentioning him because I think sometimes it's good to have someone in your mind to objectively grade yourself off of, would this person be proud of this work? Like when I write an article, if I sent this to Lyndon and Luke, would I be proud of my work? If someone saw this thing that I don't think they'll ever see, but what if they do? If I write an email, what if Luke or Lyndon joined my email list out of curiosity? Well, that's how I'm going to write this. That's how I'm going to grade what I'm doing. If I read it back and I'm like, nope, wipe that one, start over. Or I really need to dig into this part of this more. I think it's helpful as you journal to brain dump, get it out so you can objectively look at it, try and resolve it as best that you can, to at least know that you've gone through a process of trying to resolve something so you don't feel completely lost. And then maybe try and have someone who you look up to or has kind of always been there as a North Star for you, as someone you want to make proud or not disappoint, and do what you can to make that a reality in your actual life, that you're, as soon as you set down that pen and pad and you return back to your life, make that person proud with your actions. And a lot of times at the end of my entry or journal entries, I'll write, what would your grandfather think? And I remember the heaviest when I did all my heaviest lifts, all my hardest workouts, the only thing going through my mind is I imagine my grandfather standing there with his hands folded crossed as he always stands, wide leg stance, football coach, textbook football coach stance. with the plays right in the middle of his front, the front of his shorts, you name it. And that's how I went in. There was rarely any music playing for these. That was the only visualization I needed to get through that experience, to make the most out of that experience. And for me, that helps. So for you listening, if you need someone, try to think of someone. If you don't have someone, imagine someone you look up to within your industry, or, you know, Luke or Lyndon. If you're listening to this, you probably look up to those guys, as I do. So that's my take on journaling. And then as far as meditation, I think it's important to, I'm very much a fair weather meditator, as far as I meditate when I feel like I need it most, which probably is not the most conducive to long-term success of from meditation. But for me, that's my reality, and that is what it is. So for me, though, if I have all these things in my mind, I'm similar to Lyndon in the way where before I do anything, I need to brain dump and get all of this chaos out of my mind, or else that will be the only thing I think about during this guided meditation experience. And so meditation in itself allows me just to almost act as a off with the fairies moment, as Luke mentioned. And I know was echoed in The Organized Mind by Daniel Levitin, of some of the most productive brain time you can spend with yourself. One of the most productive modes your mind could be in is that of just daydreaming and creating systems and connecting forecasts and all the things that need to be connected. And I think in a distracted world, in a world where we always have something to turn to, I think it's important to spend more time with yourself, learn how to be a better, be better at introspecting, spend time and give chance to meditation without judgment on how good you are at meditating or becoming better at meditating, because that's counterproductive towards the actual act of meditation. And then journal and allow your thoughts to get out. Because for me, the last thing I'll say here is just, for me, the worst thing I can do is allow things to stay in. And I'm not great at talking to others. I'm better at talking to a few people about a few things, but as a whole, I'm quite closed off. Have been my whole life. I'm a quieter, contrary to popular belief on the podcast, as I talk quite a bit, which is the point of a podcast though. I'm a quiet guy, and I don't often say much outside of these recordings. And so the thing that's helped me most is the act of journaling, getting it out, not being constantly distracted throughout the day. And so don't see or don't be driven into thinking that time spent not doing anything is negative. And I'll leave that there. Do you guys have anything to add to that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Awesome. So I really like the concept of having someone in mind that is evaluating you in some sense, someone that you look up to, someone who holds your ideals. I think that sometimes you can also even do this yourself. I use a sort of psychological technique with some of my clients, especially when they're having trouble with dieting or something like that, to try and take them out of being very, very subjective about something and letting emotion get the better of them by going into the third person. You know, so I'll use a dieting situation, but it goes with a lot of other things. And I found, if you're having stress, anxiety, or you're just unsure about something, this technique can be very helpful. So you might be like, okay, Luke is feeling kind of hungry and he's craving some chips or something. Acknowledge that. What should Luke do in this situation, given blah, 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 blah. And so it feels very strange to pull yourself back and start referring yourself in the third person. It's a bizarre sort of thing. And it feels a little embarrassing, in fact, but it's something that's very helpful because you can almost become your own coach that way. You know, and a lot of people will have obviously coaches for training and nutrition and even lifestyle, you know, or life coaches or psychiatrists or psychologists that they see or something like that. And I think you can assume that role in many circumstances by using this technique of going into the third person, which is a similar concept to what you were talking about, Austin, where you have, you know, someone else that you understand their ideals very well and it matches something that you want to live up to. It's also a technique you can use. So I really like that concept. I think that's a pretty good one. And it does help you to kind of, you know, I've had situations where there've been almost too many options available to me in terms of like what I want to do in a situation. And it just helps to cut those down and reduce that feeling of being overwhelmed or being anxious about something and just give you the path forward. And, you know, obviously one of the big themes of what we've been talking about today is moving forward and making progress no matter what, as long as you're moving in the right direction, that's cool. And sometimes just being able to have that path cleared up a little bit for you just allows you to find the right way forward, even if it's not completely optimized and the perfect thing to do at the time and all that sort of stuff. It just helps you to move forward. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, I will, again, just echo a very similar thing. I forget the technical name for it, but I consider it just like treating myself as a case study. I know there is a more nice sounding name in the psychology literature, but as Luke said, it really does immediately, as soon as you treat yourself like a case study, like something you're reading on an exam or something like that, there is an immediately apparent answer. And at times I would be hesitant to put a percentage on it, but say 2/3, 3/4 of the times, the immediately apparent answer feels like the right one. But there has been a portion of times when the immediately apparent answer does not feel right. I am just still strongly and this might sound a bit counterintuitive, but I try to look at the problem from both the inside view that I'm experiencing and the outside view of the case study. And often the two views align, but often they don't. Sorry, sometimes they don't. And when I don't really have a perfect method for going through this, that is part of the human condition. There is no precise formula for knowing what is best to do. But often I find in those circumstances, you are best served going with your gut when your gut seems different from the immediately apparent outside view. Sorry, I'm getting super meta here, but often you just don't want to look back and be kicking yourself being like, but what was that? Like, live that reality. And if it's wrong, hey, you went for it. Like that's all I'll say on that. But I think that's a tremendous technique.
So, one, I just appreciate you both sharing. And I think for those listening, it's important for even myself to hear both of you go through just different techniques, different ways of putting things in perspective, constantly putting in things in perspective. And there's no, I think the biggest takeaway from conversation today in general is there's never going to be the right answer. There's never going to be, how often should I do this? How many, you know, what are my specific macros? What's my specific training volume? What is the exact periodization? Like, dude, you're focusing on the wrong thing. And I think it's important to, or to not go understated, that people who have the ability to be logical and rational and are educated enough to be objective and introspect and allow their mind to not only wander, but control that and channel that and go through a process that leads to a inevitable outcome that is desirable, which is not an easy thing to do in any case, which is why success is hard to come by outside of luck being part of it. Success in itself in anything is fucking hard. And one of my, Cass and I mentioned this, my wife and I mentioned, talked about this yesterday when we were drinking coffee in the morning and sitting outside, and just the concept of, Luke, as you mentioned in that your most recent post, was the sense of what is the reality of success in real life terms? You know, what is successful, what we see as successful, what we see in our curated lists of a few hundred people that we choose out of hundreds and hundreds of millions of people that we could follow on a platform. We've chosen 300 that we admire, respect, and see as successful. And now that is our scale of success. Now that is what we see and measure ourselves off of, which I don't think is always inherently the worst thing. But at the same time, I think it can be the most destructive thing you could possibly do. Because if you were to take the example, and this can go with for whether you're talking to clients from a physique standpoint or just an outlook on success as a whole. From a physique standpoint, go to a swimming pool, go to the beach. Compare what you see there to what you are seeing on your feed of your curated selection of the best physiques in the world. People who are paid to maintain their physique year around, who also, as we all know, as we've been in conditioning of the same sort for extended periods of time, there is a lot of sacrifice to that that you're not thinking about. And I think that's also important to think about in parallel to the success that you see in others, whether that's financial, professional, anything of the same sort. There's so many sacrifices that have to be made to account for that success. Sometimes a lot of luck is involved. Sometimes maybe there's not that many trade-offs, but that's the outlier. That is not the majority. That is not the group or individuals we're looking at to call the average, to call your experience on average. And the same goes for success professionally. That's what I was talking about yesterday with Cassandra, was we could take the three streets that are next to us. So let's say take my street, the street on either side. You go and evaluate, take a census of how they're living their life, their fulfillment, their happiness, their professional success, how far they've made it based off of how far they wanted to make it. You're probably going to rank up fairly well with those quote unquote very normal everyday people that actually surround you in life, which is the majority. Then take the same experiment, take a census of those 300 curated folks that you follow on Instagram. How you measure up and your perception of how you measure up is going to be vastly different and very, very disappointing, most likely, unless you're just your own breed of person. And you probably, in that case, speak in third person without being embarrassed. So that was something important that I've been thinking more and more about And that's a part of my recalibration, is trying to really objectively look at what's actually reality, what is our everyday life, what is our everyday circumstance, and how can we actually use that as the starting point or as the measuring point, not this arbitrary, curated highlight reel of what people choose to share about their own lives. And I think that's important to, and that may be obvious to everyone listening. It may be like, no shit, but I don't think it is. And I've had a hard time with, as I think we all do at different times, with comparing myself to others, even though I know I'm not supposed to, like, I, no matter how aware you are of the right thing to do or how to be objective or how to actually start to recalibrate or be introspective or understanding what makes you happy and what makes you great, no matter if you know better or not, you cannot lose sight. And this is speaking from experience and something that I do on a daily basis, or as needed. But as of late, with things going on, you know, parts of business taking a hit during this time, and other uncertainties within life itself, like, it's just, you're always needing to reflect and keep an understanding, a general understanding of where you're at within the space that you're existing within. And that's socially, that's professionally, that's your, what surrounds you, where you're currently living. That's the judgment that you're putting on yourself based off of those curated lists of individuals you look up to. It's important that, I found it to be important that you're able to acknowledge that and recalibrate back, to use the terminology that we've been using, to recalibrate back to what you know to actually be true, and be able to start to detach yourself. And two words that have played an integral role in the last 18 months for myself are detachment and expectation. And so being able to detach myself from any one outcome, thought process, feeling, emotion, and then objectively try and go third person. So I'm not speaking to myself out loud. I guess you could, and I probably should. It may come out better, or at least write it down. But is to speak to myself in third person, and to echo Lyndon here, is to think of yourself as, I'm thinking of myself as that case study. This is the reality that I'm currently living. And then how do I look objectively third person at that reality, at that case study, and start to pick apart what may make sense and what may not. And that's essentially a journaling session for myself, or that's a walk where I'm just trying to go through some thoughts, or that's time that I sit on my porch and literally just stare off at a tree for 30 minutes and absolutely forgot that I'm even outside or I'm staring at a tree. It's just, you're lost. You're allowing yourself to map through these scenarios, but you're allowing yourself to actually detach from them and not spiral into the depths of despair and angst and anxiety or depression or whatever you feel or whatever you slip into or fall into. I think it's important to be able to, if you can, at your best, try and detach yourself from that. Look at it objectively. Look at it from a third person point of view. And then the other one I just wanted to mention was expectation. And I'm someone that I've had a lot expected of me throughout my life, and therefore at different times, not always, but at different times. And that has made me expect a lot out of other people. And that expectation has gotten me into trouble, whether that's with friendships, whether that's professional relationships, whether that's an outcome based off of a goal I had. it's important to be able to go into the situation knowing what you expect, but also understanding that that expectation, there's a high probability that expectation is not going to be met. And that's something you have to be okay with. And it's the little things that I think over time add up. So even like if I send a text message, I truthfully don't expect a text message. I hope for one. I hope if I text someone that I know or I'm friends with or whatever, I get a text back. Or if I DM someone, I'll eventually get one back. But there's very little expectation on my end of a return. And I feel as if that's what it should be based on different circumstances. But if I'm reaching out to someone on my own volition or under my own volition, why are they expected to meet me where the, you know, where I'm coming from? Or why are they within a certain timeline that I'm expecting? And that's just one example, but I think it's one that's very relatable for many of us. And I know I have friends who in the past have gotten very upset, you know, a girlfriend, why is she texting me back, man? Like, it's been like an hour. And it's just, that obviously is very off of the subject matter that we've talked about today, but it's very real into what we all feel. And being able to separate yourself or detach yourself from expectation, I found to be extremely helpful for me, because then it puts it all on you, and you have to take a lot of self ownership. You have to take a lot of self responsibility. And if you're all right, and this is how I basically say it in my head, if you're all right without them contributing to this, or set yourself up to where you're going to be okay without that person either responding, contributing, you're not banking on them for your overall fulfillment or happiness within this certain thing. And being able to completely detach yourself from that. And then if they do, then awesome. Excited. I'm stoked. Now we can, you know, now it's going to be even better. Those are two things that have really, really allowed me to have a different outlook, but not spiral as bad as I can, because I'm very much, not outwardly, but very inwardly, someone who spirals. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. And that's why the methods of journaling, the methods of recalibration, the methods of perspectives, and making sure that you're setting up your reality where you can actually have solid perspectives, solid ways to judge something. And then being able to detach yourself from expectations of any one thing in particular. And those are all things that I think we could all highly, highly benefit from.
I think a lot of it comes into this weird position that we're in these days, where we have these evolutionary drives and these sort of social aspects to us as a species, you know, where we have hierarchies, we have the ability to kind of look at other people, compare ourselves, that kind of thing. It's all inherent to our evolution and how we got here in the first place. But unfortunately, it's not as helpful as it once was, and it's not as pleasant as it once was to engage with those kind of behaviors, and something that's just inherent in all of us as human beings. You know, so it's an interesting thing, because in some ways you have to engage with that social fabric. I mean, so much of our society and what makes us happy is social connection, and so much of the way the world works is down to the fact that there are certain customs that we engage in, you know, just like the clothes we wear, the fact that we use currency. It's all some kind of collective unwritten agreement between all of us. It's a social contract, and you have to honor that sometimes. But at the same time, it can lead you to be very, very unhappy. And like you said, it can lead to untenable expectations of yourself, untenable expectations of other people as well. You know, for a long time, personally, I've always had, in most things, I've had a little bit of a different opinion or a different way of looking at things than a lot of other people, you know, and I always used to kind of play along. It's like, oh yeah, it's summer and we're all going to the beach and how fun is this? This is awesome. And inside I'm going, I don't see the fucking point of this. Like, I don't get it. It's hot and you want to go outside and lie on sand. I don't fucking get it. What's the deal with this? This is the stupidest thing ever. And, you know, for the sake of not rocking the boat, you'd kind of keep quiet on things like that. I mean, that's one like silly example, but of course there are potentially dozens that I could have chosen, you know, and at this point, I think I've gotten to the point where I feel that my personal viewpoint and my personal opinions are sort of equally valid, and I'm comfortable in being able to feel that way that they are, you know. And if so, someone wants to go and do something, and I don't really want to, I can say, "Hey, I don't really want to do that." But sometimes it's like, "Hey, I know it's going to make you happy, so I'm going to come along anyway," or something like that. You know, it's trying to find that balance between. We have these social rules and this kind of interaction that we have to have with people, and that makes us happy and it makes us fit in, and sometimes it's useful, and sometimes it's really not, and it's trying to find some kind of balance there that's can be quite challenging, I think. In many ways, I'm kind of glad that I've managed to somehow buck the trend of society where I don't have like an office job and I'm doing something that's very, very unusual, and a lot of that is pure serendipity, like just happened to be in the right place at the right time, happened to just take the right paths in life and landed in a position where like I can run my business from literally anywhere in the world and I can have the freedom to structure my day however I like and that kind of thing. And a lot of people don't have that opportunity. But I'm really glad that I'm different in that way. And so that's made me think about other areas of life where like, hey, everybody does it this way, but does that necessarily mean it's the right way of doing things? And is it the right way for me? Because certainly working in an office and doing 70-hour weeks and something, hey, man, like for some people, fuck, if you want to do it, fine. If you genuinely like that, cool. But it's finding what works well for you and how you fit into, I suppose, the rest of society and how everything works. It's kind of an interesting topic for me. And I think it really has a big impact on your personal fulfillment and how you judge yourself and how you compare yourself to others, for sure.
Yeah, I would, again, I should have spoken before Luke. He's taken all my good opinions.
I'll let you answer the next one. So the next question, I'll allow you to answer first. And we're gonna pigeonhole Luke into echoing you.
I would, again, though, just reiterate a lot of those points. Personally speaking, one of the things I'm absolutely most grateful for in my entire life, though, was I felt from extremely early age, like that I was cool with saying no. Like I almost relished in saying no, to be honest. I was probably hyper contrarian from a younger age, like just for the sake of it, like that interested me. So yeah, most of the sort of the cool social constructs that arose during high school and stuff never really had an impact on me. However, that probably crystallized to a point of not pathological, but just like an unhealthy degree to which I could say no. And I didn't give people who I cared about any of my time. And that's probably just one of the inherent biases that probably just introverts in general tend to have, that they're very protective of the space that they have and the things they care about. And because that skill of saying no was very well developed in me, that I was like, no, I don't want to do that. But then over time I realized, as much as I didn't want to do that, I do like that person and I want to foster that relationship. So I'm just speaking from a personal perspective, but I don't think that is the most common experience. I would say for the most part, as Luke spoke about, there is a social contract that we need to engage in, but I believe people need to be a lot more stingy with who they engage in that social contract with. You have limited social resources and people are being hyper liberal on how they spend them. Like, it absolutely baffles me on a daily basis when I look at some of the, like, we're speaking about social media before. Like, Dunbar's number is sitting around 150 last time I counted, and people are following like 1,000 people following, and they've got 2,000 followers. And I'm like, just massaging my temples on a daily basis. Like, I don't want to presume these people are miserable, but it, that just seems like a poor way to manage your social resources, in my opinion. And when you notice those people are posting more and more, and you just worry like that. Yeah. Not to get stuck down that rabbit hole, but I guess the practical takeaway is that engaging in social behavior is super healthy and one of the most beneficial things we can do. But just because something is good doesn't mean you do it with everyone. So pick a few favorites, pick some people to really care about and build some strong relationships with, and do that. The other thing I will say just quickly is to potentially put some of what we've discussed to get today in context is we are probably quite like-minded individuals, and that was sort of the basis of this conversation. There is certainly contrasting and even conflicting opinions to a lot of what we've said. We have, as a collective, probably spoken about the value of just letting go a little bit, letting our mind wander, having introspection and a variety of things like that. However, as relatively probably obsessive people who really want to be good at probably a lot of things, you know, not just a few things, like we're probably greedy and relatively ambitious in our goals, we err on the side of doing more rather than less. Like, there are certain people that don't need more mind wandering time. They need more, as Luke speaks about those daily actionable goals of, I'm sorry, but you've got to get up and you've got to run, whether you feel like it or not. Like, and then you've got to write, and then you've got to read, and then you've got to go to work, and then you've got to come home and cook dinner and like meal prep, and like the things that probably come naturally to us don't come as naturally to other people. And I just want to be careful in the things that we are preaching are coming from probably a central source and viewpoint. It's just like rest and recovery and training. We are probably more prone to doing lots of training, speaking sort of even from a mental or philosophical perspective. It's like, so we need to pull back at times, but other people need to push a little harder, and they do other things better than we do. So yeah, probably that needs to be considered just when consuming this conversation as a whole.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. I think one thing that I am trying to get continuously better at is kind of laying out that disclaimer of, I mean, I don't seem to have an issue with it. I don't expect it of others to have a similar viewpoint. But I, from a training, nutrition, fitness perspective, I very much lay out the disclaimer of individuality and individual variability and individualization to each component of the process that we see as conducive for growth and productive. But there's a part of when I start to riff on topics like this, I think especially when I'm around or place myself around strategically, individuals who share a similar outlook and perform in a similar way. Obviously, we all do things a little differently, and we all cope with problems a little differently, and we all have different perspectives on our problems that we have. And some of us are a little further along. Like, there's a lot of things that I'm not as far along on that I like to admit. That's constant work. That's something that I'm trying to constantly revisit and figure out and get to a place that is productive for myself on an individual level. And so that's a disclaimer that I appreciate you making, Lyndon. And if you are, as you are consuming this conversation, take, as the saying goes, take it with a grain of salt and understand that if you're someone who needs the opposite or you need to do more, as Lyndon said, like, then be sure you do that. And I think under this conversation, there's the assumption that that's already existing. But I would be remiss if I didn't agree. And thank you for pointing that disclaimer out for sure. Last question. I'm going to give it to Lyndon. So this question is one where I've asked each one of these discussions, these round tables that I've been really enjoying recording. And this question is one where it can really go anywhere you'd like. I mean, just really whatever's top of mind. And obviously you guys don't have trouble with doing that, and take your time with your answer. However you need to answer it, whatever, however you need to do it. So Lyndon, if you could write a letter to yourself as a first year coach, how would it read and what would you tell yourself?
It's a very, very big question. The thing that immediately sprung to mind would be something like, you don't know as much as you think you know. And even though you're reading this, you think that you know what I think you don't think you know, but you don't. Like, that, unfortunately, I probably, like, that advice was available to me at the time, but we rationalize and we refuse to sort of believe that we don't know as much as we think we do. That is the most salient sort of thing that came to mind. I'm not sure how I would write this letter, and I'm probably going to have 10 trillion thoughts now while I'm trying to go to sleep after this podcast about what I'd write in it. But it would be that humans are both more complex and more simple than they appear to be. Like, Herbert Simon, the pioneering everything, pretty much, the dude contributed to so many fields, but I did a lot in economics, AI and early AI research and psychology, but basically said that, like, viewed as behaving systems, humans are very simple, and it is the external environment in which they acquire their complexity. It's just that, we are all relatively simple, and our inputs and outputs our responses to similar inputs produce pretty similar outputs. It's just that we all have so many different environments that we're existing in, and no two people are existing in the same two environment, let alone the same two people in that environment. I'm losing the plot a bit. It's, as I said, past my bedtime a little bit. I don't know as much as I think I know, and humans are complex, but they all have pretty simple and, dare I even say it, like, sweet cause. Like, if you can get through to them, like, there is often a level with every single person that you can connect with them on. I really should have let Luke go first. That's all I'll say.
You shouldn't have said anything, man.
Yeah.
You pigeonholed yourself. I love it.
I did.
I appreciate the answer, man. That's better than you think it was.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely echo that again, humans being both complex and simple at the same time. I think that goes for any fitness information or topic. It can be as simple as you want it to be, or it could be as complex as you want to make it. And I think for me, one of the things that I've really learned is that there's two aspects to it. The first is that the communication of information to people is almost as important as the actual information itself. And so from a practical standpoint, the way that you interact with each client and each individual will have a really profound effect on how successful they are, how they think about what you've given them, how much they engage with it, all of that sort of stuff. And I think the second thing is that the information itself is not exclusive to fitness. Like, well-being is far more than fitness. And I think this is something that I wanted to say earlier on in the conversation as well. And I kind of went off the point and then forgot about it. But to come back to it, I've really been struggling lately with how I can move my business more towards being about well-being as a whole. And of course, fitness is a huge part of that. Like, training and nutrition, massive part of it. But unfortunately for a lot of people that actually follow all of our information and our accounts and listen to us speak, they've kind of already got the fitness and nutrition focus there. And it's really other parts, a lot of which we've been speaking about today, where they need to bring up their weaknesses there. They need to shore up those weaknesses. And that was certainly the case for me. I had no trouble getting into the gym 6 days a week or eating enough protein or whatever. You know, like, I had no trouble studying because I was curious and interested in it. But there's other areas of my life that needs a ton of work, and that contributes to your overall well-being. And fundamentally, that's what we're here for. We're not here for, you know, the six pack is not really the six pack. It's because you want to feel good and you want to be healthy and you want to feel happy. And that's kind of what we're driving towards. So it's a tough thing because then it brings in a whole deal of complexity and a lot of topics that are much more esoteric than simply like, well, I want to weigh 5 kilos less, so I want to be able to lift a bit more. You know, so for me, it's been a bit of a struggle trying to integrate that in a business where, to my previous point, the way you deliver information is so important. I think that often you can really lose people when you get to any level of complexity, because now it's like, okay, well, if we're talking about overall well-being, I mean, shit, we've just opened a can of worms, haven't we? Like, it's finances, it's spiritual stuff, it's psychological stuff, it's relationships, it's training and it's nutrition, and it's a bunch of other things in between. So I guess that can get complex really quickly, but it does mean that if I was a coach right now, like starting my career, I would be thinking about how I can communicate best with my clients to get the results. And fundamentally, if you know some basic information, there's actually a lot of different ways you can deliver that and get success, you know. So you don't need to know everything on the planet to be a successful coach, but you do need to know how to deliver it to someone for it to be useful. And then at the same time, understanding that often it's some of the stuff that you maybe aren't so focused on in terms of training and nutrition that really yield the bigger result. And just bearing that in mind as well and being on top of that is probably the two things I would think about telling myself earlier in my career.
Excellent, man. I appreciate both of those answers and would absolutely echo them both. I'll go last and just say that I echo those both. And one of the biggest things that I've tried to get better at and would agree upon heavily is we often think it's all about what we do know. And that's typically how we start to compare ourselves as coaches, especially if you get too down into that rabbit hole early on. And that's an unfortunate rabbit hole to get down into. It can be productive towards striving for more growth in the areas of learning. But I don't think that's where it usually goes. I think it usually goes towards how do I measure up? You know, how do I be the smartest person in the room? How do I always have an answer for everything that's going to be asked? And I think it's something that, sure, a goal you could strive for, but it's never going to be the reality. And I think you can always, like you said, if you're a curious person, you can know a little bit about a lot of things, and hopefully you know a lot about few things, because that's usually how we make money and create well-being in parts of our life that are very important, like financial well-being and security and shelter and all of that stuff. But I think the biggest thing that I've reflected on and just trying to get better at is that communication aspect and becoming a better communicator, not only in fitness, but as a son, a brother, a spouse, a friend, just overall a better communicator. And that in and of itself has been more fulfilling of an endeavor than most things I've tried to accomplish. And so trying to become a better communicator in other aspects of life does have direct carryover. And that's, as we, you know, a theme and mention of living life beyond fitness is extremely important. And staying too narrow focused on one single goal that you refuse to waver, you refuse to be average, you know, don't be mediocre, like all the things you've always heard. That's for another day. But use whatever motivation you need ultimately. But the most important thing is learn how to communicate, understand the foundations. Don't be scared to return back to learn more about the foundations and how to better communicate those. Because if you start from a point of understanding those very important foundational principles and you learn how to communicate those foundational principles extremely well to a wide array of individuals of many ages, cultural beliefs or cultures, gender, age, everything. You know, whether you're working with a 20-year-old female who wants to compete or a 55-year-old male who just wants to live a longer life and feel better about himself and get back into some shape that he once was in. You have to communicate those foundational principles and you have to do it well. And you have to learn how to do it, or it's good to learn how to do it from a wide array. And I remember hearing Lyndon mention this on the episode I listened to yesterday. Was it's important to, you really want to, typically early on in your career, you're told to niche down. You really want to work with a very individual population or a very specific population. And all you do is to get better. You get better at communicating with that population. Like, okay, I'm really good at communicating with my friend group. And I'm really good at communicating with 20 somethings, which will, in my experience, only get you so far. And it's something that if you learn early on and you expose yourself early on to a vast array of age groups and genders and cultures, that's a big part of why I find traveling to be so important, because you are forced into these situations completely outside of fitness. Like you're forced into these situations with real life, with real conversations, and then you're able to bring those back and relate those back to some fitness questions that you may get from any general age or gender or culture, which are very, very important. But I'm sure we all have to pee, so I won't keep us too long. I appreciate both of you guys' time. I'll wrap it up there. If you guys don't have to pee too bad and want to add one more thing, any last thoughts, you have the floor. But if you just want to wrap it up there, then I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, just want to say thanks. Appreciate it for both of you.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same. I know people pay good dollars to access the brains of you both. So I feel very fortunate to be doing it for just a small fee, and I'll fix you up for that at a later date, Austin. But no, honestly, I think, yeah, just to touch on your final point, not getting stuck into an echo chamber too early would be a massive one for just any young coach. And like, whenever you think you're outside of an echo chamber, like you're still in one. Like, so just try to go bigger and bigger every single time. That's what I'd suggest. So yeah, I think that was an excellent point that you raised, and I want to put that in my original answer.
we'll insert that.
Thank you again.
Absolutely, guys. Hey guys, Austin here. Thank you again for listening into the episode. It means a lot. If you can, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave the podcast a 5-star review. This does help us grow and be found by others. Also, just wanted to mention, if you guys are interested in free education based around training and nutrition, be sure to check out physiquedevelopment.com/free education, where you'll find free downloads, videos, articles, etc. No strings attached. Again, thank you. Chat soon.